welcome to the Saving Castles podcast, the sanctuary for castle devotees and medieval history enthusiasts. Prepare to embark on a thrilling voyage through time as we unveil enthralling history and legend. From ancient folklore to cutting-edge restoration, we've got it all covered. So grab your headphones and let's dive right in.
In the heart of winter, when the days are short and the nights long, there emerges a season of anticipation, a time cloaked in mystery and mirth. This is the tale of medieval Yuletide, an era where the veils between the natural and the supernatural seem to thin, and the air brimmed with the scent of holly and the echoes of distant carols. Imagine, if you will, a world where the crackling of fires in grand castle hearths was a beacon of warmth against the encroaching cold, where lords and ladies, peasants and priests all found common ground in the celebration of the season. It was a time when the darkest days of winter were not just endured, but transformed into a festival of light and life. The medieval Christmas season was a tapestry woven with threads of ancient traditions and Christian beliefs. It was a time when the barriers between the secular and the sacred were blurred. The winter solstice, the shortest day of the year, held a special significance. It was not just a celestial event, but a moment imbued with magic and mystery. People believed that on this night the veil between worlds was at its thinnest, allowing spirits, both benign and malevolent, to walk among the living. In the heart of this mystical world were the castles, standing tall and proud against the winter sky. These stone sentinels were more than just fortresses. They were the epicenters of Yuletide celebrations. Within their walls, the medieval Christmas was a spectacle of light and shadow, of feasting and fasting, of solemnity and revelry. As the Yuletide approached, castles would be adorned with evergreens, holly, ivy, and mistletoe. These were not mere decorations. They were symbols, potent and powerful. Holly, with its prickly leaves and bright red berries, was believed to ward off evil spirits and bring good luck. Ivy, clinging to the walls and spreading across the floors, symbolized eternal life and resurrection. Mistletoe, a sacred plant in many ancient cultures, was thought to possess mystical powers, offering protection and the promise of peace. Amidst these verdant decorations, the lords and ladies would gather, wrapped in furs and finery, their faces illuminated by the flickering firelight. The air would be filled with the scent of roasting meats and mulled wine, and the sound of music and laughter would echo through the halls. It was a time of excess, a brief respite from the hardships of medieval life. But Yuletide was not just a time for feasting and frivolity. It was also a time for reflection and renewal. The Christmas season was a reminder of the Christian belief in the birth of Jesus, the light coming into the world during its darkest time. The celebration of Mass and the telling of the Nativity story was central to the season. Moreover, the medieval Christmas was a time of charity and generosity. Lords would open their halls to the poor, offering food and warmth. Gifts were exchanged not just among the nobility, but between masters and servants, a tradition that harkened back to the Roman festival of Saturnalia. In this world, where the boundaries between the real and the unreal seemed to blur, the legends of Santa Claus took root, known by many names, St. Nicholas, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle. He was a figure born from a melange of folklore, religion, and cultural traditions. He was a symbol of the season, embodying the spirit of generosity, mystery, and wonder that defined medieval Christmas. As we embark on this journey through the medieval roots of Santa Claus, let us embrace the spirit of Yuletide. Let us walk through the hallowed halls of history under the boughs of holly and ivy and uncover the mysteries of a time long past. For in understanding our past, we can better appreciate our present and perhaps catch a glimpse of the magic that once filled the world during this most enchanting season. In the tapestry of medieval life, the winter solstice was a thread of deep and vibrant hues, a time when the shortest day and the longest night held sway over the land. This celestial event occurring in the depths of December was more than a mere astronomical occurrence. It was a profound moment laden with symbolism, mystery, and anticipation. Imagine the medieval landscape, a tableau of snow-clad fields and forests where the cold air was crisp and biting, and the night seemed unending. In this wintry world, the winter solstice was a beacon of hope, a sign that the sun would once again ascend, bringing with it longer days and the promise of spring. In the castles and villages, the winter solstice was marked with rituals and celebrations that blended pagan customs with Christian beliefs. This was a time when people sought to ensure the return of the sun and ward off the dark spirits that were thought to roam freely during this longest of nights. The castles, those enduring symbols of medieval might and majesty, became centers of these solstice celebrations. Lords and ladies, knights and squires, servants and serfs, all gathered within their protective walls to mark this auspicious event. The great halls were adorned with evergreen boughs, and roaring fires were lit in massive hearths, casting a warm golden glow and offering a defiant blaze against the cold darkness outside. Feasting played a central role in these celebrations. Tables groaned under the weight of roasted meats, freshly baked bread, and sweet treats. Ale flowed freely, and wine, spiced and heated, warmed both body and spirit. These feasts were more than mere indulgences. They were communal events, a way for people to come together, share their bounty, and reinforce social bonds. Music and dancing filled the halls, the melodies of lutes and lyres mingling with the rhythmic stamp of feet and the laughter of revellers. The winter solstice was a time of merriment and joy, a brief respite from the hardships of daily life. It was a moment to forget the trials and tribulations of the past year and look forward with hope to the year ahead. But the winter solstice was not just a time for feasting and merriment. It was also a time for reflection and renewal. The long night provided an opportunity for introspection, for considering the cycles of life, death, and rebirth. In the quiet of the night, people might ponder the mysteries of the universe, the turning of the seasons, and the nature of their own existence. In this atmosphere of celebration and contemplation, the legends of Santa Claus found fertile ground. In many cultures, the solstice was associated with the coming of a mystical figure, a bearer of light and hope. This figure, known by different names in different lands, would evolve over the centuries into the jolly, gift-giving Santa Claus of modern times. As the night gave way to dawn and the first rays of the sun pierced the horizon, there was a sense of rebirth, of new beginnings. The winter solstice was a reminder that even in the darkest of times, there is always the promise of light, of better days to come. In our modern world, where the turning of the seasons is often noted with little more than a passing glance, the medieval celebration of the winter solstice invites us to pause and reflect. It reminds us of the rhythms of the natural world, of the enduring cycle of darkness and light, and of the human capacity for hope, joy, and renewal. So let us embrace the spirit of the winter solstice. Let us remember the feasts and fires of medieval times, and let us carry forward the light of hope into the days ahead. In the pantheon of historical figures who have left an indelible mark on the world's festive traditions, none shine as brightly as St. Nicholas, the revered patron saint of Christmas. His story, woven into the very fabric of the Yuletide season, is a blend of historical fact and enchanting legend, a narrative that has spanned centuries and continents. Born in the 3rd century in the village of Patara, in what is now modern-day Turkey, Nicholas was a man of devout faith. He was born to wealthy and devout parents. They tragically died in an epidemic while Nicholas was still young. This loss profoundly impacted him, shaping his future path as a bearer of kindness and generosity. Inheriting a substantial fortune, he chose the path of piety and charity, guided by the words of Jesus, "Sell what you own and give the money to the poor." Nicholas became the Bishop of Myra and was renowned for his deep compassion and unwavering commitment to aiding the destitute and suffering. He traversed his domain, a beacon of hope, in a world fraught with hardship, offering not just material support but also spiritual solace. One of the most enduring tales of his generosity tells of a destitute widower with three daughters. Without a dowry, the daughters were destined for a life of despair. Under the cloak of night, Nicholas secretly delivered bags of gold to their home, providing for their dowries and ensuring a bright future for each daughter. This act of clandestine benevolence, often depicted as gold coins tossed through an open window, became a cornerstone of the legend of St. Nicholas. The fame of his good deeds spread far and wide, transcending the boundaries of Myra. He became known as a protector of children and sailors, a figure invoked in times of need and celebrated in times of joy. His life was marked by miracles and acts of profound kindness, which elevated him to a status bordering on the mythical. After his death, the veneration of St. Nicholas spread throughout the Christian world. He was canonized, and his feast day, celebrated on December 6th, became a day of joyous festivities, particularly in medieval Europe. On the eve of his feast, children would leave their shoes out, hoping to find them filled with gifts and treats in the morning, a practice reminiscent of his clandestine gift-giving. As the centuries passed, the story of St. Nicholas evolved, intertwining with local traditions and folklore. In some cultures, he was depicted as a stern but benevolent figure, a bishop clad in red robes, riding from house to house on his white horse, rewarding the good and admonishing the naughty. In others, he was a more enigmatic figure, a blend of Christian saint and pagan legend, reflecting the complex tapestry of medieval beliefs. In the medieval imagination, St. Nicholas transcended his historical origins. He became a symbol of hope and generosity, a reminder of the power of kindness in a harsh world. He was a bridge between the celestial and the earthly, a tangible connection to the divine, embodying the spirit of Christian charity. The transformation of St. Nicholas into the modern figure of Santa Claus was a gradual evolution shaped by cultural exchanges and the passage of time. But at its core, the essence of the legend remained the same. A figure of benevolence and joy, a bringer of gifts, and a symbol of the generosity that lies at the heart of the Christmas season. In today's festive celebrations, where commercialism often overshadows sentiment, the story of St. Nicholas invites us to pause and reflect on the true spirit of Christmas. It encourages us to embrace generosity, not just in material gifts, but in acts of kindness and compassion. It reminds us that the greatest gift we can offer is the love and care we show to those around us. The journey from St. Nicholas, the revered 4th-century bishop, to Santa Claus, the jolly elf of contemporary Christmas lore, is a fascinating odyssey through time and culture. This transformation is a testament to the enduring human need for symbols of hope, generosity, and joy, especially in the darkest times of the year. In the twilight of the medieval era, St. Nicholas was already a beloved figure across Europe. His feast day, December 6th, was marked by the giving of gifts, especially to children, echoing his legendary generosity. However, the figure of St. Nicholas was not static. He was continually reshaped by the beliefs, cultures, and needs of the people who venerated him. As the Reformation swept through Europe in the 16th century, the veneration of saints, including St. Nicholas, came under scrutiny. In many Protestant regions, the figure of St. Nicholas was discouraged or even banned. However, the human desire for a symbol of Yuletide generosity could not be so easily quashed. In these areas, new Christmas figures emerged, such as the Christkind in Germany or Father Christmas in England, each embodying a blend of Christian and pagan winter traditions. In the Netherlands, however, the figure of Sinterklaas, a direct descendant of St. Nicholas, remained popular. Dutch settlers brought their Sinterklaas traditions to the New World, specifically to the colony of New Amsterdam, now New York City. Here, the legend of Sinterklaas began to intertwine with other cultural influences, gradually transforming into the more familiar Santa Claus. His transformation was significantly propelled forward in the 19th century. In 1823, the publication of the poem A Visit from St. Nicholas, more commonly known as The Night Before Christmas, by Clement Clark Moore, played a pivotal role. Moore's depiction of Santa Claus as a jolly, plump, and friendly figure who travelled in a sleigh pulled by reindeer and entered homes through chimneys captured the public's imagination. This version of Santa Claus was a far cry from the solemn Bishop of Myra, yet he retained the core elements of kindness, generosity, and an affinity for children. Around the same time, political cartoonist Thomas Nast began to popularize the image of Santa Claus in Harper's Weekly. Nast's illustrations from the 1860s to the 1880s solidified Santa's appearance as a rotund, cheerful man with a white beard, clad in a red suit with white fur trim. His imagery was further cemented by the 20th century advertising, most notably by the Coca-Cola Company, which used Santa Claus in its Christmas advertising, making him an icon of contemporary culture. The transformation of Santa Claus was not just a change in appearance, but also in context and meaning. As he evolved, Santa became a symbol of the secular aspects of Christmas, embodying the spirit of giving and joy. He transcended religious boundaries, becoming a figure celebrated in diverse cultures around the world. The modern Santa Claus, with his workshop at the North Pole and his team of elves, represents a magical, almost otherworldly aspect of Christmas. He is a figure of folklore and popular culture, a blend of myth and marketing, yet his roots in the medieval St. Nicholas are still discernible. His evolution reflects the changing times and societies, adapting to new needs and new worlds while maintaining a connection to the past. In this transformation from saint to jolly elf, we see the enduring power of myth and legend, the ability of stories to evolve while retaining their core message. Santa Claus, in his many forms, continues to inspire a sense of wonder and joy, a reminder of the power of generosity and the importance of nurturing the childlike wonder in all of us. In the heart of the medieval winter, amidst the cold and darkness, the Yule log burned as a beacon of warmth and hope. This ancient tradition, deeply rooted in the Yuletide celebrations, was more than just a practical source of warmth. It was a potent symbol, rich with meaning and steeped in centuries of folklore and ritual. The Yule log's origins trace back to pre-Christian times, when the winter solstice marked the rebirth of the sun. It was a time of deep significance, where ancient peoples celebrated the gradual return of daylight. As Christianity spread across Europe, these pagan customs were woven into the fabric of Christmas celebrations, transforming yet enduring in the form of the Yule log. In medieval homes and castles, the selection of the Yule log was a ritual in itself. A great tree, often an oak or an ash, was chosen for its size and symbolic significance. Oak, revered for its strength and endurance. And ash, known as the tree of life in Norse mythology, were seen as fitting tributes to the sun's return. The chosen log was then cut and brought into the home with great ceremony, often on Christmas Eve, and placed in the largest fireplace. As the Yule log was set ablaze, it was not simply the act of lighting a fire. It was a sacred ritual, a prayer for light, warmth, and protection during the dark winter months. The log was lit with remnants from the previous year's log, symbolizing continuity and the eternal cycle of life and rebirth. This act was imbued with symbolism, a tangible connection to the past, and a hopeful look to the future. The burning of the Yule log was a communal event, a time for families and communities to gather around the hearth. The warm glow of the fire provided a respite from the winter chill, while its light pierced the darkness, symbolizing the triumph of light over dark, of life over death. As the log crackled and burned, it was customary for people to share stories and songs, a celebration of community and tradition. The fire served as a gathering point, a place of comfort and joy where tales of the past year were shared and hopes for the coming year were voiced. In some regions, it was believed that the ashes of the Yule log possessed protective powers. They were carefully collected and kept throughout the year, a talisman against misfortune and evil spirits. In other traditions, the ashes were spread over fields to ensure a bountiful harvest, a link between the warmth of the hearth and the fertility of the earth. The Yule log also held a place in love and courtship rituals. Young couples might sit by the fire, sharing whispered promises and dreams, their futures as intertwined as the flames dancing before them. In this way, the Yule log became a symbol of love and hope, of the enduring human spirit in the face of the harsh winter. As time passed, the tradition of the Yule log evolved. In some cultures, it transformed into the Yule log cake, a sweet treat that retained the symbolic shape of the log. This culinary adaptation allowed the tradition to endure even as the size of hearths and living spaces changed. The enduring legacy of the Yule log in modern Christmas celebrations speaks to its deep-rooted significance. It is a reminder of our connection to the natural world, to the cycles of the seasons, and to our ancestors who gathered around the fire centuries ago. As we celebrate the holiday season, the story of the Yule log invites us to find warmth and light in our own lives, to gather with loved ones, and to remember the traditions that bind us to the past and guide us into the future. It is a symbol of continuity, a thread that connects us to the medieval world, reminding us of the enduring power of ritual and the eternal hope for light in the darkness. In the tapestry of medieval Christmas traditions, wassailing and caroling emerge as vibrant threads, weaving together the elements of music, community, and celebration. These practices, deeply rooted in the Yuletide spirit, were not just forms of entertainment, but were imbued with symbolism and significance, resonating through the ages. Wassailing, a tradition that predates even the medieval era, was a ritual of health and fertility primarily associated with the apple orchards, but later becoming a part of Christmas festivities. The word wassail comes from the old English with thirlhall, meaning be thou hale or be in good health. This greeting was at the heart of wassailing, a toast to good health and a prosperous year ahead. In the depths of winter, when the orchards were bare and the fields lay fallow, people would gather to partake in the wassailing ritual. They would venture into the apple orchards with pots and pitchers of warm, spiced ale or cider, a concoction made of apples, sugar, spices, and ale. Amidst the dormant trees, they would sing and chant, pouring the wassail over the roots of the apple trees. This act was a symbolic gesture to awaken the trees, to encourage them to yield a bountiful harvest in the coming year. In the medieval villages and hamlets, wassailing took on a more communal aspect. Groups of villagers, often young men and women, would go from door to door singing and offering a drink from the wassail bowl in exchange for gifts, food, or money. This practice was a precursor to modern caroling and reflected a broader tradition of communal singing and celebration during the Christmas season. Caroling, in its medieval form, was a far cry from the structured choral performances of today. It was a spontaneous communal activity where people would gather in public spaces, homes, or even in the halls of castles, singing songs that told stories of the nativity, the winter season, or local legends. The songs were often accompanied by simple instruments like lutes, flutes, or drums, adding to the festive atmosphere. The carols were not just songs. They were stories set to music, narratives that captured the essence of the Christmas spirit. They spoke of the birth of Christ, of the winter solstice, of the joys and sorrows of the human experience. In singing these carols, people connected with their community and their faith, sharing a sense of belonging and joy. In the great halls of castles, lords and ladies would host feasts and celebrations where music played a central role. Carolers, often minstrels or troubadours, would perform, their voices echoing through the stone chambers. These performances were a blend of entertainment, storytelling, and spiritual reflection, adding depth and meaning to the Yuletide celebrations. As the night wore on, the music would continue, a constant thread tying the evening together. Couples might dance to a lively tune, or all would join in a chorus, the collective voice of the community rising in harmony. In these moments, the barriers between high and low, rich and poor, seemed to dissolve, united by the power of music and the spirit of the season. Over time, the traditions of wassailing and caroling evolved. The songs changed, new melodies and lyrics were added, but the heart of the practice remained. These traditions were a testament to the human need for connection, for celebration, and for expressing joy through music. Today, when we sing carols or hear of wassailing, we are participating in a tradition that stretches back centuries. We are connecting with our medieval ancestors, sharing in an experience that transcends time and place. It is a reminder of the enduring power of music and celebration, of the capacity for joy and community in the heart of winter. In the midst of the deep winter, when the world was shrouded in snow and the night seemed to stretch on endlessly, the medieval people turned to nature for symbols of life and renewal. Among these, holly and ivy held a special place in the Yuletide celebrations, adorning homes and castles with their vibrant colors and evergreen beauty. Holly, with its glossy green leaves and bright red berries, was more than just a decorative plant. It was imbued with deep, symbolic meaning. In a world dominated by the changing seasons, the evergreen nature of holly was a powerful symbol of endurance and eternal life. Its sharp leaves were thought to offer protection against evil spirits that were believed to be more active during the dark winter months. The red berries, vibrant against the snow-covered landscapes, were seen as symbols of life and rebirth, reminders of the persistence of life, even in the coldest and darkest of times. The ivy, with its clinging vines and lush foliage, complemented the holly in both beauty and symbolism. In medieval symbolism, ivy represented dependence and affection, the way it clings to walls and trees, mirroring the human need for support and companionship. Together, holly and ivy represented a balance of masculine and feminine elements, strength and resilience paired with loyalty and devotion. Decorating with these plants was a significant part of the medieval Christmas. The process began well before the holiday with the gathering of holly and ivy from the woods. This activity was more than a simple chore. It was a communal event, a reason for people to come together and celebrate the season. Songs were sung, stories were told, and the cold winter air was filled with laughter and conversation. Once gathered, the holly and ivy were brought back to the castles and homes. Here, they were woven into garlands, wreaths, and other decorations. The great halls of medieval castles would be transformed, with holly and ivy adorning walls, hearths, and tables. These decorations were not just for beauty. They were a way to bring a bit of nature's resilience and vitality inside, a reminder of life's continuity in the heart of winter. The act of decorating was a communal and often festive affair. Lords and ladies, knights and servants, all would participate, adding to the castle's festive atmosphere. The decorations served as a backdrop for the Yuletide celebrations, enhancing the sense of warmth and community that was so essential during this time. In addition to holly and ivy, other plants and items were used in medieval Christmas decorations. Mistletoe, with its mystical associations and tradition of kissing beneath it, was also popular. Candles were lit to symbolize the return of the sun's light and warmth. Even simple items like nuts, fruits, and ribbons were incorporated into the decorations, adding to the richness and variety. The tradition of decorating with holly and ivy persisted through the centuries, enduring as a beloved part of Christmas celebrations. The carol, the holly, and the ivy, with its origins in the medieval era, reflects this enduring tradition, telling the story of these plants and their symbolic meanings. Today, when we adorn our homes with holly and ivy, we are participating in a tradition that stretches back to the medieval world. We are connecting with our ancestors, sharing in a practice that transcends time and place. It is a reminder of the continuity of life, of the cycles of nature, and of the enduring human spirit that finds joy and hope even in the depths of winter. In the tapestry of medieval life, the tradition of gift-giving was a thread that wove through the fabric of society, binding communities and reaffirming social bonds. Unlike the commercialized and often impersonal nature of modern gift-giving, the medieval practice was imbued with symbolism, personal significance, and a profound sense of community. Gift-giving in the Middle Ages was not confined to Christmas, but was a crucial part of various celebrations and rituals throughout the year. However, during the Yuletide season, it took on a special significance, reflecting the spirit of generosity and goodwill that pervaded the festivities. In the grand halls of medieval castles, lords and ladies exchanged gifts as a display of status, allegiance, and mutual respect. These gifts were often elaborate and costly, including finely crafted jewelry, richly embroidered clothing, or exquisite works of art. For the nobility, the act of giving and receiving gifts was steeped in political and social meaning, a dance of power and diplomacy played out through the exchange of material goods. But beyond the stone walls of castles, in the homes of peasants and townsfolk, gift-giving was a simpler yet equally meaningful affair. Gifts were often handmade, reflecting the skills and talents of the giver. A knitted scarf, a carved wooden toy, a basket of baked goods. These were gifts that carried the warmth of personal touch, a tangible expression of care and affection. In a world where material possessions were fewer and harder to come by, the act of giving something one had made with our own hands was a deeply personal gesture. It was a way of giving a part of oneself, a sharing of time, effort, and talent. These gifts were cherished not just for their material value, but for the love and thought that went into their creation. The tradition of gift-giving was also a reflection of the medieval social order. Feudal lords would bestow gifts upon their vassals and servants, a gesture that reinforced social hierarchies while also serving as a display of generosity and benevolence. In return, vassals and peasants might offer gifts of their produce, handicrafts, or services, a token of their loyalty and gratitude. Children, too, were recipients of gifts, though these were often modest compared to modern standards. A simple toy, a piece of fruit, or a sweet treat, these were gifts that brought joy and wonder to the young, a magical part of the Christmas celebrations. Giving in the Middle Ages was not just about the exchange of material goods. It was also about the exchange of goodwill and blessings. It was a way of strengthening community ties, of showing appreciation and affection, and of spreading the spirit of the season. As the medieval world gave way to the Renaissance and beyond, the tradition of gift-giving evolved. The emergence of a more commercial economy and the growth of cities changed the nature of gifts and the way they were given. Yet, the core spirit of the practice, the expression of love, gratitude, and community, remained a constant thread, enduring through the ages. Today, when we exchange gifts during the holiday season, we are participating in a tradition that has its roots in the medieval world. It is a reminder of the enduring human need for connection and expression, of the joy that comes from giving and receiving, and of the bonds that are strengthened through this simple yet profound act. As we draw the curtains on our exploration of the medieval Christmas, we find ourselves immersed in the echoes of a bygone era, an age where the Yuletide season was more than just a fleeting period of festivity, but a deep, multifaceted tapestry of tradition, faith, and communal spirit. The medieval Christmas, in its essence, was a period where the stark contrasts of the human experience were vividly drawn against the backdrop of winter's chill. It was a time when the warmth of human connection battled against the cold isolation of the longest nights, where the light of hope flickered in the shadow of uncertainty, and where the joy of celebration rose above the hardship of daily life. In the heart of medieval society, Christmas was a period of profound significance. It was not merely a celebration of the birth of Christ, but a complex interplay of Christian dogma and pagan traditions, a harmonious blend that spoke to the very core of the human spirit. The season was a reflection of the medieval world's understanding of the natural and the supernatural, the earthly and the divine. The legacy of the medieval Christmas is etched not just in the annals of history, but in the very way we celebrate the holiday season today. The practices, beliefs, and traditions of those times have been passed down through generations, evolving yet retaining their essence, influencing our current festivities in ways we might not even realize. The tradition of decorating with holly and ivy, the warmth of the Yule log fire, the joy of caroling and wassailing, these are remnants of a medieval past that continue to enrich our present. The act of gift, giving, once a meaningful exchange within a rigid social hierarchy, has transformed into a universal gesture of love and generosity. The medieval Christmas was also a time of reflection and introspection, a trait that remains relevant in our modern celebrations. It was a period where, amidst the revelry and mirth, there was space for contemplation, for acknowledging the transient nature of life, and for fostering a sense of gratitude and hope. Perhaps one of the most enduring legacies of the medieval Christmas is the sense of community it fostered. In a world where the distinction between the highborn and the lowly was sharply defined, Christmas was a time when these boundaries were, if not broken, then at least blurred. The lord of the manor would open his hall to his subjects, sharing in the spirit of communal festivity. This practice resonates in our current traditions, where Christmas is seen as a time for togetherness, for reaching out to those around us, and for celebrating our shared humanity. In the modern world, where the pace of life seems ever increasing, and the connection to the natural rhythms of the seasons is often lost, the medieval celebration of Christmas invites us to pause and reconnect. It encourages us to appreciate the simple joys of gathering with loved ones, of sharing a meal, of singing a song. It reminds us of the value of tradition, of the richness that comes from looking back and honoring the past. As we embrace the holiday season, let us carry with us the spirit of the medieval Christmas. Let us remember the lessons of the past, the enduring power of faith, hope, and community, and let these guide us in creating a future that is bright with the promise of peace, joy, and togetherness. Thank you for joining us on this enchanting journey through medieval history. While our weekly episodes will continue to captivate your imagination, there's an exclusive treasure trove for subscribers, a secret vault of bonus episodes, filled with extra tales and deep dives into the subjects we cover. Your curiosity fuels our mission, and we're truly thankful for your support. Until we meet again among stone walls and towering turrets, keep that torch of curiosity burning bright. Thank you for listening.